Them boys came from humble beginnings, tending bar and dancing Coyote Ugly style at A1 Gooch's bar in Boulder Junction. Rescued by Master Joda and nursed back to health on Pepsi and French onion soup. They were then taught to master the dark arts of musky fishing. Now them boys have grown and each have been bestowed with a St. Croix saber. They've been charged by Joda to bring hell to the Essex. Dumb as you are, fish you must. Now the new master angler class will share their knowledge as we are the Padawans.
All right, folks, welcome to the Musky 360 podcast. If you don't know from that intro, we have a winner for the most ridiculous podcast review. What do you say, Guru?
Dude, that was a darn good review.
Anyway, the good Dr. MD, he left a review of the podcast. That's what you heard at the top. That guy wrote that as a podcast review. Send me a message. You won the original Boulder Junction hand tied Joe Booker 700 Booker Tail. It is yours, my friend. Shoot me a message at the app. That I literally, I'm not kidding. When I read that dude's podcast review, I LOL'd. What are the kids saying now? Them kids still they're lolzing. What do you do on them TikToks, Tyler? Are you still TikToking and Snapchatting and
I don't know.
I'm getting old now. Dude, am I in the top 8 on your MySpace? That's all that matters to me. But I wanted to share with you because we love all you guys so much. We've got a couple runners up. You're going to win a Junior's End lines. These made us laugh. Tyler, you've got the first one. Read the other review that made us laugh pretty dang hard, buddy.
This one's from Ben.
Ben.
Yeah. But the title is so good. The podcast is so good, it ruined my marriage. I love the title, Ben. We're home wreckers over at Musky 360. Mm-hmm. And so Ben says, the Musky 360 podcast is the most informative and entertaining listen you will find anywhere on iTunes. Listening to the podcast has completely geared up my obsession over musky fishing to the point it's all I ever think about, talk about. Naturally, I just had to book a trip to spend a few days on the water with the man behind the podcast, Stephen Powell.
I'm sorry.
Even though I knew it would get me in trouble, unfortunately, this did end up being the nail in the coffin. And my wife told me she wanted to separate the following day.
Listen, it doesn't get any worse than that. I've got the next one is up from Luke. He says, between the knowledge shared by Half Spool Steve, the guru, the dude, and Master Joda, there's physically no way you can't catch muskies the next time you hit the water. I didn't even have to cast anymore. They're jumping into the boat, which is kind of dangerous, actually. Not only are the muskies flocking in my boat, but also every female in Vilas County. Thank you, Musky 360.
Boat's going to sink.
The boat's going to sink. You get two of the Vilas County women on there, you could sink that guy. You got to watch. Listen, it's just like muskies. You got to watch where you're catching them at, you know? So it just be real picky. Yeah, you know, just make sure you're turning on the ones you don't want anyway. Don't let too many of them into the boat, if you know what I mean. Goodness gracious, we're morons. We've covered that, correct, Tyler? We got that. Very nice. Well played, sir. Anyway, we actually got a hold of somebody that's not a moron, and he is pretty righteous, dude. Lee from Today's Angler, I actually got a chance to talk to him. He is busy. You know him from Today's Angler, Lee Lures, and this dude is just rock'em sock'em robots doing all kinds of stuff. So without any further ado, I want to share with you the combo I have with Lee, and here she blows. All right, guys, I've got the man, the myth, the legend, one of the hippest, coolest dudes in musky fishing right now, Lee from Today's Angler. How you doing, bro?
I'm doing well, but I think you're stretching it a little bit there, buddy.
You know, well, we're known for the super intros. Oh, we always stretch it. But with that being said, you guys are just absolutely killing it. You and Robbie have just, you know, obviously we air them here on the app. You guys have so much going on the YouTube channel, and really you guys are the pace setters, the trend makers in muskie fishing. So what's going on with the show right now as far as just like what's your vision for what's going on in the future?
Well, unfortunately, this year's been a little goofy with obvious situation right. going on. And it turns out Robbie ended up moving to the North Woods in the Hayward area. So it's mm-hmm. been a little more tricky with Robbie and I getting out together. But we've right. definitely made some strides, and we'll continue to do some more trips together. Like, we just got back from Vermilion mm-hmm. and unfortunately I was I managed to step on my net handle and break my foot, so I'll be a little slow going here, but it didn't keep me hold me back. I was able to catch the only fish the 3 days we fished up there, so it,
man, you know, and that stuff just happens on the boat, but you know, that's sort of just the realism of what can happen out there, you know. As far as you never know what's going to go down on a musky boat. And if you guys have not seen that clip, it's absolutely amazing because you're sitting on a tackle box. You know,
I am sitting and fishing. Correct.
So, you know, under any other circumstances, we would all laugh. You know, he had no other option. But if you have to sit, it can be done. That was on sort of one of the old school, like your main flap tail, too, wasn't it? Like, that's sort of your beat to death number one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. That was bait number two that I ever made of the flap tail. And I don't know, I'm not a real counter of muskies, but I right. would say definitely dozens, and then, you know, probably close to 100 fish on that bait, 75, 100, I don't know, somewhere a lot. But yeah, it's just kind of a classic design and doesn't really need a paint job. Everybody asks, what's your favorite color, Lee? And yeah. my favorite color is wood, the wood. One that doesn't have paint left.
All right. Have you ever seen Lenny on Booker's boat? I don't know when you guys Lenny yeah. is this top raider. It was a return from years back. And when you're on his boat, and you guys have fished with him, and you guys are definitely going to do it some more in the future and everything, probably just didn't get a chance to break it out. This top raider, there's just no paint left. And it's just the one. It's the only bait you can't touch on the boat. You know, it's like you can throw
feel it.
Yeah, and I see that flap tail, and I go, I think that's the one for Lee, you know? And I think we all, as musky anglers, we all get those couple hands of baits where you're like, yeah, I'll let my buddies throw everything else but that one. But anyway.
Irreplaceable.
Irreplaceable. Thank goodness it floats, you know? So
that's for the time being.
For the time. Yeah. Then they get real good when they're soaking it up. But anyway, so everybody in the whole musky wide world here knows that today's angler. I'm going to embarrass you a little bit because I did have... 2 weeks ago, this girl was 15. She's on the boat, right? And she says, do you ever watch Today's Angler? And I said, yeah, absolutely. I think everybody sort of does. And she says, I think he's really cute, right? And I go, oh, yeah. I said, Robbie's a real cute guy. And she goes, no, Lee. So you're Mr. Worldwide. They love you.
Wow.
Young and old, everything in between. Oh, it was so funny. She was a super fan. I was like, oh, we could text him. She's like, no, that's embarrassing.
So, oh my gosh, that's funny.
You guys are killing it, the show. Obviously,
I think probably the biggest thing about it, you know, when I met Robbie when he was about 16, mm-hmm. and I, of course, saw a lot of myself in him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I told him straight up, I said, don't fish for a living. Go get a real job. Go to school. Do this, do that. Did he listen? Of course not.
Of course not.
So at any rate, here we are. And I think it's been really the perfect blend of my experience with his youth, mm-hmm. You know, covering the complete demographics, you know, across the board.
It's amazing. It's amazing how much reach and scope that you guys have. And what I've been impressed with is connecting with the next generation of musky anglers.
For sure. I can't go a couple hours where I don't get a message, Instagram, whatever, that we started a person Muskie fishing.
Absolutely.
So that's what it's about. That's half of our goal here, really, is growing the sport. And the more people that do it, the more fish that are going to be stocked.
I mean,
it's just a popularity factor. So, I think that's important. That's one thing we really kind of strive to do. Mm-hmm. And, of course, educate and try to do a little entertainment as well.
Absolutely. So. Well, you guys are hitting on all cylinders when it comes to all those points without a doubt. So the one thing as far as my nerdy musky brain wants to pick on you about are the baits, because I throw the flaptail, throw the Leviathan, your baits are just killer. And I don't know if everybody realizes that these are coming out of your shop and these are hand built.
Yeah, pretty much. There's not many baits that I don't touch myself at some point in the process. As a matter of fact, I'm interrupted in my shop time doing this interview, so and I'm happy to do so. But I was I've been building away all day today, so and all day yesterday, and so on. But at any rate, I don't know. I just pretty much. Well, it goes back to 1998. Mm-hmm. My mother said, "Hey, Lee, all the baits out there, there's Roland Martin spinner baits and this and that. How come you don't have a lure?"
Right.
And I'm like, "Well, moms are always right, correct?"
Always. always.
The very next day, I went to Menards. I got a coat hanger rod, which happened to be out of cedar, and a coping saw, a wood file, and some sandpaper. And I started making, which was the first bait that really, at an early musky fisherman, I became a topwater fanatic.
Yes.
And like actually caught my first musky at night fishing on a hog wobbler.
Ooh.
On the local lakes here. And of course that was the bait I really loved to fish the most. So, mm-hmm. You know, obviously, most of what lures are out there nowadays, particularly mine, are refined versions of what's already existed in some shape or form. And I set out to make my first musky bait, which I made in the winter of 98-99.
Mm-hmm.
And long story short, I did not cast that bait until the first week of August 1999. I had zero confidence in it. I painted it with a spray can. And to even dig the story a little more,
yeah.
I was fishing in, I think it's Vilas County, with Jay Essie from the Muskie Shop.
Oh, Jay.
And Jay had raised like a 37, 38-inch muskie on, let me think back now. He raised it on a top raider, uh-huh. And I think went back with a jackpot.
Yeah,
we went back to the fish sometime later, and he got first dibs at the fish. When we went back on it, it did not bite. I'm like, I'm going to throw my bait. I haven't thrown it all year.
Right.
I didn't even hardly put it in the water to see what it did. I was just so confident in other baits.
Right.
So first cast, I kid you not, the first cast I ever made with my bait, I caught that muskie on it.
Oh, come on. I love it.
Jay is my witness. That is how it went down. And that's where I started making baits right there.
Well, talk about some great quick feedback. You went, okay, this will work. We've eliminated. will they eat things I've made? The funny little quick tangent there. Jay had filled me in on that previously, but
sure.
We brought it up. And this is in a private conversation. That same lake, I had a snake jump out of the water on me.
Oh, no kidding.
I know what lake that was. And yeah, we told the story in the last podcast. It's the same thing because Jay brought it up because it's super tannic water and I'm terrified of snakes. And I had about a three foot snake come into the boat on me. I went out the other side of the boat. So I jettisoned from the other side, phones gone, everything. It was quite.
It was
a fun day. Great moment in sports. But so you've overcome that thing, and I've done it too, where like surely a fish isn't going to bite this crap I've made in my garage, you know, out of inferior parts. And obviously it leads to where today, you know, what I find so interesting about it, it's like being from West Virginia, it's sort of that ruggedness. Well, there's no baits we're going to make our own, a la Crane Baits, Widowmakers, Jack Cobb, you know, that Amabama's, that's where that sort of came from, that we can't get baits. you know,
and we're going to make them.
We're going to make them. And that's where a lot of these baits that come from West Virginia are from, you know, just that screw it. We ain't buying them. We're making them. You know, you sort of done that and then refined it. And it's just like one thing, and it's not a sales pitch, people that are listening. It's just like I'm nerding out on these things because of the build quality and things of that nature. Where did you get your woodworking skills? Because that's one thing is like I'm a handy dandy, handy sort of built my own house kind of dude. But was that like trial and error, like your lathe work, your you know, because everything's really consistent. That's the one thing I've appreciated about your baits is because there's some baits that are handmade and stuff where they're inconsistent. Like, how are you getting to that point where you're getting consistency in an inconsistent medium like wood? You know, because wood is all, there's always variables there. Like, how's that process work for you?
Well, it's actually quite simple because I literally have never done any of the woodwork except for that very first bait I did, to be totally honest. And that's why it took me so long to really get this thing going, is that I did not have someone that could produce wood for me. I just never, I never got the lathe set up. I never did this, that, or the other, and ended up finding a neighbor through a guide client of mine that did tons of woodwork. And I'm like, hey, you think you could make this stupid thing? And he's like, well, yeah. And he's been making baits for me since 2004.
Oh, wow. So you're dreaming them up and just sort of laying it at his feet and going, hey, I've come up with this. Can you, would you, could you? I love it.
I cannot claim that and never have. I've never led anyone to believe that I do all the woodwork of those baits. I couldn't produce as many as I did if I did so. With that being said, the gentleman that does them for me is obviously top notch. And that's the one thing I've always stressed on, you know, is quality of my stuff. And it has to go out exactly how I would fish that bait. Yes. This can't be any less than that, or it won't have my name on it.
Well,
so,
that's the thing is everyone is consistent. You know, because they're so popular. There's more flap tails that come on my boat with clients. It's unbelievable. You know,
that's funny.
Everybody shows up with their one box. You know, when a guy client shows up and here's the box, and I tell them, bring the stuff you're confident in. Bring you know, just a handful of stuff.
Yeah.
And there's always a flap tail. It's such a, you know, it's funny. Not funny, but it's so interesting how it's tangible the reach that your program has because, you know, 3 years ago, there are no flap tails. Now it's everybody's got a flap tail and everybody has a lot of confidence in it. But the thing is this, they all run, you know, and that's amazing. That's what's why I wanted to pick your brain about this stuff, because it's so consistent. And, you know, cedar baits have their own fraught with their own problems because of wood consistency. But which leads me to, where are you dreaming this stuff up? Because that's what I find so amazing is, you know, You're sort of reinventing some classics, like the Leviathan is like a hot rodded Suic in some regard, you know?
Sure.
What's sort of the from Lee's driving the truck and he's dreaming of something he needs to ends up as a Lee lure?
Well, basically none of the baits I do have had really any, nothing innovative as far as completely new, completely new tools or what have you.
I think you're underselling it a bit though.
Well, they're basically just refined versions of what's already existed. There was already a flap tail. There's already a tail bait. There's already a dive and rise. There's already glide baits. You know, and as far as the Boilermaker goes, that was actually Robbie's, baby. He's the one that came up with that. And I was the one who was able to, you know, build lures and facilitate the Boilermaker. And now he's got his own lure line, Bit Lures, with the Boilermaker spinnerbait. And he's working on some new stuff as well.
Very cool.
So, So as far as where I'm coming up with it, I guess the biggest thing for me was the durability factor. Mm-hmm. I want someone to be able to buy a lure and catch as many fish as possible on that. And there is no doubt there are lee lures out there, especially water choppers, top H2Os, which was my first bait that I mentioned earlier in the story, that have caught over 100 muskies each. There's a lot of them out there. There really is. And that's the reason I don't think you see many of my baits come up for sale, like on the forum pages and Facebook pages and whatnot, is people... They hang on to them because they work forever. And if they don't work, I need to know about it. And I want you to message me, call me, whatever it takes. And that bait will work. I will get you another bait. And a lot of times it's just how to work the bait. Some of the baits, like a Leviathan. Mm-hmm. It's actually 1/3 glide bait, 2/3 dive and rise. If you hit the bait too hard, it spins out because it's made more of a glide bait. So you hit the bait a lot softer than you would a suic.
Right.
Okay. So the more lead you put in the bait, even the lighter you hit it as well. And for flaptails, for instance, the most common message I get, Facebook, whatever, is, yeah, my flaptail just nosedives and doesn't really do anything. Mm-hmm. And granted, they don't really do much of anything anyway.
It's a slightly subtle bait. A lot of people.
For sure.
Yeah.
But that's like the number one question or comment or whatever. And I'm like, you're going too fast. Just slow down. It's a slow bait. And that is why it's so good, because big fish do not like to chase.
No.
And it's lazy. It's finesse fishing muskies. So. Yeah.
That's a whole other podcast right there, because I think we're both on the same tip of slow down, you know, of anything.
For sure.
Slow down, but continue. I apologize.
Oh, no, for sure. So just the different styles, you know, I'd say probably the bigger flap tails, the flap 9 and the flap 10, you know, being the fact that there had been flap tails for years. Of course, the earliest version was the snod load that, to my, as far as a muskie bait, right, snod load was the first. Of course, there were bass versions by Hedden made a flap tail. And then Smitty, Russ Smith from Minocqua area, of course, he produced a flap tail for I don't know how many years, to be totally honest, a long time. And, you know, that was just I happened to fish with someone that was really had a lot of confidence in flap tails. And the guy is like, you got to make a flap tail. I'm like, okay, here we go. Let's make one.
How we make this thing.
within 10 casts, the first flap we ever made, I had a customer get a 47 incher here in Madison.
Oh. Come on.
I'm like, okay, I guess this is
going
to work.
There's something going on. You know, just as far as, you know, the flap tail craze, if you mind me, in musky fishing that you've created here, that, you know, it's one of these things of like you keep talking about, oh, it existed and all this stuff, but obviously you modernized it and brought back an entire presentation, which is so cool. There's not many people that can say that they have modernized a presentation ever where it's just like, I mean, flap tail fishing, all the baits you're naming, aside from the Smitty bait, that's all antiquated stuff. You know,
for sure.
That's grandpa's tackle box, you know.
Exactly.
It's awesome because, you know, that you've modernized that and it's effective. It's one of those presentations, though, that has just been overlooked, because I think the amount or the level of slowness, for lack of a better term, that you can get out of that bait's crazy. You know,
it's hard for people, though. That's really the saving grace that everyone isn't using them, is because it's hard to do.
Yeah. Well, that
for a lot of people,
the podcast listeners know they call me Half Spool Steve for a reason. You know, I'm going out there with 100 yards of line at best, because they know I'm pounding them all the time to slow down. And the flap tail for those finesse situations, even when what I like about that lure is it's effective when it's not even what I would call a top water bite.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about. It's not top. This is not break out the pacemaker, top raider, water chopper. Well, right. You know, that's not what that bait's for. At least from my, you know, my anecdotal experience with it on the water. What's sort of your thought? When are you going to the flap tail with? Because, you know, that's probably the most widely distributed bait is yours as far as Lee Lure Customs. What are your thoughts? Like, when is Lee going, it's time for the flaptail?
When we can't move a fish or get a bite.
So
it will at least move them in all wind conditions and all chop, all sun, light, different, mm-hmm. Conditions. When we can't get them on other stuff, that's when we pull it out. And you'd be amazed how many times in flat, calm and sunny, they'll come up, paddle behind that thing and grab one of those back rear hook hangers,
yeah.
and make that mistake, which we all love when that happens. Yeah, so
get them to screw up, they say. So are you, just out of curiosity for people that have that bait, because a lot of people do, and how to implement it. So you're using it. Are you using it in some situations as a search bait as well? Or are you going?
Absolutely.
Okay.
We almost always, I would say, for the normal course of summer to early fall fishing, mm-hmm. we've got one going in the boat 80% of the time.
Gotcha. So
it is a search bait. If you're in the front of the boat, obviously you got to cast ahead more. Mm-hmm. And I tend to be a slow fisherman. So, yeah. But back of the boat is a good option, easier a little bit. But yeah, I don't know. And then the bigger flaps, I mean, that's what we were throwing on Vermilion and had some mm-hmm. good action. Unfortunately, we didn't connect with any good ones on that trip on the big flap, the flat uh-huh. 9 and 10. But, that was a lure that no one had really done as a giant flap tail.
No,
and I'm like, well, everybody loves 9 and 10 blades.
Yeah.
Why don't we just, and there was no blades available in a larger size of the flap tail shaped blade. I'm like, well, right. a 9 and a 10 makes a killer sound, you know?
What does it matter?
I'm like, yeah. So just slap that on the back of a giant, pretty much just an elongated beer can or energy drink can. And there you have it.
We've got a marker buoy with a tin blade. When I first saw the no wake one, I saw that is an imposing bait, my friend. That is an imposing bait. I love it. I love it. I love it. What's the biggest, maybe not catch, but what's the biggest contact you've had on that bait? I mean, it's got to get attention. I love it.
Oh, personally or within the boat.
Oh, just in general.
I don't think we've broken 50. No, we have not broken 50 personally, but how many days I get on big fish water anymore or right. very seldom.
Right, right.
I know a lot, definitely a lot of people that have had good experience. I know one guy got 3 over 50 in 2 nights on the flap 9 last year. And it's definitely a big fish bait, and small ones will hit it too. You'd be surprised.
Absolutely.
I missed like a 42 on the flap 10 the other night here. They don't know how big it is. It's just food to them.
It's just food. Let me ask you this, because this is a personal question that I have, and I'm sure it'll help some other listeners. How do you store your flap tails? Because they are
they're a pain. I usually leave them on my rod. No,
it's hanging on the deck. Yeah,
yeah. I just take one of the rear hooks, the bottom hooks, uh-huh. and just go in through the split ring of the other hook, and that'll kind of fold it together.
Okay,
so cool.
And that'll keep the arms down. Yeah, I have.
It helps.
Mine just resides in the dry live well. I go, this thing,
Right,
that's,
right.
That's intrinsic of the bait. And obviously, too, you've got some great videos that we have on the app and on your YouTube channel of where you're doing rewiring and stuff of that nature. If you're having any of that, if you've caught a fish, you need to clip anything and
sure.
get that thing reset up. Lee, I know you got tons of baits to make. I appreciate this guy. You're one of the hard. Let's hold on. I'm not even going to go yet, because one thing I do want to point out about Lee is I remember watching you on the Lindners fishing Storm Thunder Beasts. How many?
Sure.
How long ago is that?
It'd be about 2008,
eight.
7 or 8.
Right. So here I am fresh out of college watching this guy doing that stuff. You didn't come out of nowhere. And that's what I like about you. You have worked your ass off in this business. And that's what a lot of people don't realize. If you just found Lee through Today's Angler, Lee, you started a tackle shop with Jay from the Muskie Shop.
For sure.
You've been through how many variations of busting your ass in the industry? And, you've done other shows. You've done this. You've done that. You've guided a lot of people. If you've just watched the show, how long you were a professional guide for quite a long time.
25 years. Yep. Yeah.
And that's one thing. I think a lot of things that get glanced over in this business, if you just found Lee through YouTube, or if, hey, all you know of Lee is today's angler, you know, you came up through the school of working and hard knocks and really doing it, you know, and that's one of those things you did. Just not, you are not an overnight sensation, my friend. You know, it is, you got it hitting on all cylinders. I think that's worth letting people know that, you know, you've been in this game for a long time and have put in the work, and you've earned the merit badges. You know, you've done that for a long time. But anyway.
No, it's been fun. I got no regrets, and glad that I've been able, you know, to share it with people. And that's really what inspired me to do this. Is when I was a kid, I loved taking, I had a different rotation of friends that when my dad would take me fishing, we went wading up on the Wisconsin River. Mm-hmm. I had a rotation of different friends, and each weekend I would take a different friend with me, and just always liked sharing it, the experience, you know, whether mm-hmm. it's the knowledge, the just time on the water or what have you. It's just fun to hear other people's experience and whatnot. So, keep rolling here.
It's amazing. Well, I know you've got baits to make. You're probably the busiest man in muskie fishing right now. So I'm going to let you get back to the important stuff. So people are getting their Lee lures there in the mail, getting them at the, we got them available at the muskie shop as well. Any other outlets that people can get those other than leelures.com, muskie shop? That's pretty much. And then we don't know if we're going to have any muskie shows this year. Does anybody know that yet?
No idea.
So those are,
yeah, just the two, my online store, leelures.com, and then of course muskie shop. I've been working on a couple of big orders for those guys, so they should be having some new product here shortly.
If you want a Lee lure, call the muskie shop and ask for Jay directly. Refuse to talk to anybody else and just pester him on the phone, or Elmer, one of the two. You know, teasing. No, just call the guys at the muskie shop. Anybody that answers, I'm always harassing Jay that for people to call him just to bug him from the podcast. But you can get them at the muskie shop. You can get them at leelures.com. Keep supporting today's angler, because you guys are doing the Lord's work out there and bringing new people to the sport. And like you said, that's the one thing of, as your channel grows and as the sport of muskie fishing grows, we're only going to get better fisheries out of this.
That's what we're after. And let me get a second to just thank everyone for their support. It's really been remarkable. I'm just happy to be a part of it. And Robbie and I are always happy to help people with their questions. I know we don't always get back to people, but we really try. And sharing people's, you know, photos on Instagram and whatnot. And what you guys think and like and want or don't like matters to us. And we love to hear it. And so just thanks again to all you guys out there for all the support over the years for us. So.
Well, Lee, I can't thank you enough, and thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule, my friend.
No problem. Let's do it again. We could talk some more. I'll find the time.
All right. Thank you, buddy. Man, Lee, that was cool stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a great listen, Lee. Thank you.
Yeah, it's really neat, because Lee's one of those guys that a lot of people don't realize has been in the business for a long time, like I said, in the podcast, but you know, he's doing so much, and a lot of people just don't realize how hard it is to film a show. Because me and you have done it, and it sucks.
It is tedious.
It's tedious. Intensive. How many times are you out there, Tyler, and it's just like you're preoccupied. You're trying to catch a muskie, which is hard enough, and now we're fooling with cameras. We're fooling with lighting. We're fooling with audio, wireless mics, batteries.
Batteries, all sorts of great stuff.
You know, anybody out there that has attempted to film something knows that, and much less, hey, we got to make sure that we're getting it. We got to catch this thing, we got to net this thing, and we got to get all the right shots. It is a pain in the butt, and it's crazy, you know. I don't love the fact that he hurt himself, but I love the fact that he was like showing himself fishing on that tackle box where he broke his foot, because stuff happens on the boat. It's a tough deal. Musky fishing is always just a pain, you know, and here's this guy just grinding it out. I know, like from the video, he keeps such a stiff upper lip. It had to hurt, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It had to have been tough. But anyway, Tyler, it's time for Use Your Questions.
Ooh.
Huh? The first one up is from William Kimball. He says, I got to read. I don't even know if this has anything to do with muskie fishing. Hold on. Okay, so the first question we got this week, William Kimball says, make Chewbacca going through a bad divorce sounds. Thank you, William. This is a muskie fishing podcast.
Yeah, William. We're not really into that whole Star Wars crap, man.
Star Wars is for nerds.
Nerds! MC squared!
MC, math is good. I'm not a nerd, are you, Tyler?
No, dude, I'm a hardcore sportsman.
I'm like, we dab on muskies, don't we?
Dab.
But me and you, I'll tell you, we're not nerds. And there's no way we could ever possibly do some stupid Chewbacca crap.
Just never. Never in a million years.
Chewie, how could you? I went through your text messages last night while you were asleep. You've been texting pictures of your fur saber to other women. I'm leaving your ass, Chewie. I'm leaving you. I'll see you in court, you son of a bitch. I'll take all your monies.
All right, the next question is from Bradley. He says, I'm fairly new. He's fairly new into the muskie game. I'm sorry, I'm still laughing, dude. He said, I'm fairly new to muskie fishing. And he lives in Utah. We don't have a I'm so messed up from that. I'm sorry, folks. He says, we don't have the regular muskies. We've got tigers. Yep. Out west, they got them LT grays. He says, so I'm wondering, is there really any difference in the way that we should fish for them, or is it all about the same? So, Bradley, I have actually spent time in Washington State. I've spent time in Oregon chasing these things, and it is a little different. From my experience on just, and these are straight up tiger stocked lakes, bright colors, right? And these fish are not that susceptible to the figure eight. They're just simply not. They don't like, Tyler, you've seen it when northerns just will not stay in an eight.
Well, tiger muskies have the northern DNA. So yeah. That's the part they have. They're not really interested in figure eight.
And the thing I would say is this, as far as the mechanics, do an eight, period. At least do a lazy J, wouldn't you say?
Lazy J.
But at least be doing that mechanic. So if you are fishing regular muskies, you've got that down and you're doing at least one rotation on a figure eight. What I have noticed, and it's like that pike DNA where cold fronts are good, I've noticed with tiger muskies, cold fronts are good as well. You know, it's like it's not one of these deals where they're as peculiar and particular as, you know, 100% muskies. So cold fronts can be a killer thing. The one thing I noticed when I was out west is not many people are fishing these things and not many people are fishing shallow enough. And I think it comes from like in Washington and Oregon, where I spent all that time out there, you know, those are primarily deep fisheries for like kokanee and salmon. So these guys are actually geared for fishing deeper. Don't be afraid to go shallow with those fish. We just destroyed them out there. We were catching 5-6 fish a day that were 40 inches plus. And it's just an untapped fishery. So you don't have to worry about conditioning out there. What you need to do is work on those basic mechanics. Bright collars, a lot of these fisheries, they have squawfish. They have a few other things going on that are slightly different as far as forage base. New Mexico being one of those fisheries where they have goldfish. So basically that simple match the hatch is always effective, you know, and just matching the colors to the forage base. But if anything I can tell you, strap on some double eights and throw and go. We did really, really, really well with night shiner depth raiders out there. And that was something that was really good, because the one thing I've noticed is those tigers, you know, Pike like going deep. Those tigers aren't afraid to go deep either. I know I'm sort of contradicting myself where I just said those shallows. But, you know, if you're not contacting fish up in the shallows, don't be afraid to sort of turn the boat around and throw that deep water because they'll hang on those breaks. Any stuff, Tyler, because I know you catch a lot of native tigers or natural tigers. What are you noticing in the difference in the way they're reacting?
They react very similar to pike. I never catch any in the figure eight. I've never done. I've caught them like right as I'm about to go into figure eight, but never in the eight. And I've caught primarily all my tigers in cold fronts. Mm-hmm. One thing that I always do is once it's like a hardcore cold front,
mm-hmm.
I target lakes that I know have a high population of tigers. So my chances that day are increased to put a muskie in the boat, and it just happens to be a tiger muskie.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing. Oh, I don't know if you can hear my pod cat is meowing. Hey, what are you doing? One of the cats is back here in the studio. Anyway. If you hear the meow, that's not me or Tyler. That's an actual cat. So, you know, that's the thing is one thing me and you talk about that we've stolen from Joe is, you know, big pike on musky spots in a cold front, you know, and you can really on those high bright sun temperatures falling days, you can really capitalize on tigers. So that's the one thing, Brad, I would focus on is. Don't worry about the frontal movements as much as we are with straight up muskies. You know, you're going to be able to have a lot more opportunity with tigers as far as their propensity to hit in crappy conditions. And the one thing I've noticed is bright, go loud, loud colors, loud baits, a lot of action. And that'll get you going. Other than that, just take all these basic musky mechanics and apply it to them and just throw and go. Let us know how you're doing. We'd love a little feedback from you on that. The next up is Bob. Bob says, I've been trying to locate inside weed edges. He says, I've referenced many articles on shallow late summer muskies here on the app and had a lot of success. Is it possible in waters with an outside weed edge that's around 9 feet? He said, hold on. He said, is it possible in waters with an outside weed edge at around 9 feet that there really isn't an inside edge? Or do I need to go in search of shallower and I'm just afraid to go further in and embrace the slop? So, Bob, the answer to your question is an article I just put on the app. So it is basically about getting sloppy.
Slopper, slopper, sloppy.
Just like me and Tyler did on our jaunt to Wisconsin. We got extra sloppy. It depends on what body of water there is, if there's an inside weed edge or not. Embrace the slop. You know, if you're looking for that, check out the article I just put up on the app. But, Tyler, how many fish did we catch that are like in that first 3 feet of just shallow water leading to the weeds?
Oh, yeah. I couldn't even tell you.
It was goofy.
It was kind of ridiculous. We're like, okay, do we go in even more shallow?
Right. We're basically throwing on the bank, but
like we're hitting the bank. Do we go in more?
Do we go? Yeah, exactly. Should we get out of the boat? Would this be more effective if we fished from the shore?
It was basically that shallow.
You know, a lot of times you'll get this. And it depends. This is a by body of water kind of thing, or by each weed bed. You'll get these little gaps between the shoreline and the weeds, and in a cold front, that can be ridiculously good. I mean,
pockets are incredible.
They are, and so I put up an article talking about the tactics we use and some of the modifications I do to slop masters, just to get them to run in that thickest stuff. And the other thing I would say is this is like, you know, that is where others fear to tread because it is a pain in the butt. It's just so problematic to be in slop that thick and you're just like, this sucks. Every other cast is just a foul bait. But if you're not catching any fish on the main basin or outside edges, that's the jam. You know, I mean, it's just one of those deals of those fish. And I say it in the article, but I'll say it again and Tyler will attest. Nobody's touching those fish most of the time.
I don't see anybody doing that ever.
Which is something, dude, not to get on a super big tangent here, but me and you talked about punching.
Yeah, like bass punching.
Punching. If you don't know what punching, Tyler, why was I not standing in the back of your butt going, punch that in there, boy, punch it. And you're going, what in the hell are you talking? Punch it.
Which is, punch it. And then a snake popped out and you fell out of the boat.
Well, that's because I'm a moron. Actually, I was telling Lee about that off the air on the interview. That's such a, God, that was a low moment in sports. Anyway, punch it. Punching is what us southern morons do for largemouth and extremely dense vegetation. So, what happens when you get lily pads and you get this vegetation? It has a canopy effect, which provides shade, right? You will have active fish in that shaded water. It is cooler. It is full of bait fish, and they're impossible to target. But what you got to do is you got to punch your lure in there. And basically, you don't have a retrieve. You're if you can imagine with lily pads, you know, the densest vegetation's there on the top, and you've got these little ways that you can work your baits through there. That's something me and Tyler, we are actually have a modified slot master presentation that doesn't involve a blade for punching for muskies, which we will broach that subject later. But if you start thinking in that methodology of I'm going to get in the thickest stuff, I'm going to grind my brains out all day long, I'm going to rip off 263 pounds of weeds, but I will catch a giant. And it can be done. I mean, Tyler, we've done it. I sort of, it's something I work with you on. It can be done if you're willing to get in there and battle the slop. Next one up is Dustin. What are some effective patterns on lakes in northern Wisconsin in mid to late August? He said, you know, depending on normal weather patterns and cold fronts, what do you guys have to say about northern Wisconsin mid to late August? Tyler, your thoughts, sir.
You're dead. Okay. I like to target in late August. I've caught some of my biggest muskies targeting rock gums.
Mm-hmm.
That is a pattern that weeds are still good in August. Yeah. Weeds are always basically almost all year round are good.
Good, yeah.
And but I have caught some of my biggest muskies off of rock gums in August.
Mm-hmm.
Cranking crankbaits or casting bucktails, either one. I've caught that's something that I'm about to start focusing on pretty heavily.
Yeah, getting out, and because we start seeing that late July. You know, some mm-hmm. of those bigger fish will move out there and get to the subsurface stuff and just move their way out. And then, you know, it can be rock humps and it can be that open water bite, that rock hump and that bar bite.
Yeah,
absolutely. All right. Next up is Jake. Jake says, I come to Vilas County every summer for about 2 weeks. He says, I fish on a lake. Please don't say the name. I'm not going to. He said, I fish on this certain lake quite a bit. The past few years have been great, but this year have blown. Yeah, I hear you. It can happen. He said, I managed to move 2 fish on my fly rod off of a magic weed bed that I have. What tips or techniques do you have for figure eighting with a 9-foot, 9-weight fly rod? Well, you've come to the right place. Tyler, you fly fish for muskies a little bit, as do I. The thing that I would say is this, and I am not a fly rod master, but I'm good enough to be dangerous, is shorten your leader up. That is one thing that I've noticed that has helped me quite a bit. And the way that I connect my leader and how much leader material I'm using, to be honest with you, I use 100-pound fluoro and I only use about 24 inches. And I try to make sure that the entire setup, the way I've connected my fly line, my float line to my leader, allows me to get that first little bit through the top eyelet of my fly rod. And so that's allowing me to tighten that fly up to the rod tip. The same stuff that you hear us talk about with typical figure eighting is if you have too much line out, you're not going to be able to figure eight well.
You're not going to be able to figure it at all.
No. And so making sure that the way that you've connected your leader and your main line on your fly rod and allowing it to get through that eyelet is super important. And being allow you to have control. When I'm figure eighting a fish beside the boat with a fly rod, because I fish a 9-foot, 10-weight, not a big difference. I don't want to wang my arm out and I don't need to throw super big flies because I use flies as like a finesse presentation anyway. Little known secret is that I actually use a fly rod as a throwback a lot of times. And I keep it on the deck of my boat pretty regularly where I can just pick that thing up and zip it out there quickly after a fish has followed. You know, takes me 10 seconds and I got it going. But I'm tightening up to the rod tip pretty close, 24 inches, so I have really good control of the fly. And what I'm doing is I'm jamming it down there and I'm popping it. The other thing you can do with like a deceiver or some other flies is if they're not going to take it on the first turn, it's the same with a glide bait. I'm not afraid to dead stick those sometimes. If it's a fly that's going to sink, I will dead stick and pop it up if he's not going for it on the first turn, second turn. But tighten up the distance of your rod tip to your fly and add dead sticking into that. Tyler, you got any input on that, or is that about cover it? Because I think we're pretty much on the same page when it comes to fly rods on these things.
Yeah, that about covers it. I'm not the most avid fly fisherman, but but yeah,
you got
yeah.
it in the boat, baby. I know. There's it's,
you've seen it.
I've seen it. I have seen it with my own two eyes. It is in the guru's boat. I've made him a throwback fly convert. There's actually an article I put on here on the El Muskie 360 talking about some of my funkier tactics for like springtime muskies. If you can throw a fly rod and you're a muskie angler, you don't have to have a fancy setup. As long as you've got something that can wing like a 4 to 6 inch streamer out there, and you will be shocked how effective that is as a throwback lure. It's ridiculous. Because if they come in low and slow, and they come in sort of, I don't want to eat anything. There's nothing more subtle than a fly.
And it's, I mean, they basically just suspend if they're light enough.
They're just, it's ridiculous, dude. The other thing I'll tell you, it is hard to beat in a cold front. It is just absolutely, I can't think, you know, when we get into like little phantom, 6 inch phantoms, which are just killer cold front bait. You know, baby depth raiders. There's not too many baits that I think of other than a baby DR and a phantom that can compete with a fly. And it's just one of those things a lot of people go, this is stupid. Yeah, it's work. Yeah, it's a pain in the butt, but I don't sit there and do it all day. I use it as another tactic on the boat. It's just like, you know, you see these guys and they pick up a rod to throw. You've got a rod to throw, you know, monster mega Medusas and quadruple bulldogs, a lot of people do. So what's the difference of just having a fly rod on hand to be able to do a different thing? Anyway, I'm going to move on to Luke. Luke said, I bought a Tranx 400 and I'm having trouble casting very far with normal size lures. Any suggestion or tips? Tyler, take it away on how to set your reel up to cast.
Okay. Well, make sure, I always tell everybody this, that doesn't really affect casting too much, but make sure your drag is set properly. If it's super loose, you're not gonna be able to reel it in.
Right.
And if it's too tight, if you hook a real big one, it's gonna be crazy.
Right.
Make sure you have that set first. There's a little dial on the side of the reel handle. Okay. And that, I can't, what was that adjust, Steve?
It's like the tensioner knob that, it's your anti-backlash that, you know, controls how fast that spool's spinning. Yeah.
So what I do is I take that dial, and so I like to drop the lure. So you reel your lure up, just take any lure, reel it all the way up to the rod tip with the leader, and then that anti-drag dial. Make sure you're going to use that to adjust how fast or slow it falls to the water.
Yep.
So that you reel it up, you have your lure up above the water. You press the button. If it falls super fast, crank that up, whatever, which way it tightens it or loosens it to make it fall slower. And I like to adjust it right about to the point where it doesn't really quite fall unless you give it like a little flick.
Uh-huh.
And then it goes down slowly and it stops at the water. It doesn't keep going when it hits the water. It stops at the water. And to me, that's how I set up all my reels so they can cast the far and not have crazy backlashes.
Yeah. And that's the thing is you got to figure out, you know, Luke, one thing I'd say is make sure that your casting mechanic is appropriate. You know, the way that you're casting, it's easy. You can watch a video of a guy, whether it be Doug Wagner or me or Joe or Tyler or the dude or Lee or anybody here on the app. Just watch them take some cast. And you can sort of see how far back they're bringing the rod, how far forward they're bringing on the cast. Pay attention to that. So make sure your mechanics are right. And like Tyler said, is adjusting that reel, the anti-backlash on the side, that's actually going to slow your spool speed. The biggest thing I can say, and the way that I do it, is I do the same thing, but I have mine wide open. And you can get mega distance. I fish old people reels. I fish Abu Garcia left-handed round reels. I can cast just as far as any super reel, period. I've not seen anybody that can cast as far with a different reel because of that. What I do is I have really good control over the anti-backlash with my thumb. So you can either use the reel to control that, or you can ride that spool with your thumb and get a feel for it that way. Because essentially, if you're having problems casting any distance with normal size lures, that probably means your reel's cranked down, your anti-backlash is too tight. With that being said, you guys on the podcast that listen all the time have heard me say I can cast anything on my setup. I mean, I throw a bait called an AC Shiner, which is a balsa wood bait that's like 3 inches long. It's tiny. It weighs nothing. I can throw that just as far as anything, but I have no anti-backlash setup on my reels, and I'm doing that with my thumb. So either you can do it Tyler's way, which is a very common way, or you can remove all that crap and get a feel for the reel with your thumb and ride it. Hence the old school name. Some people call these of thumb burners. You know, that was the old school name for a bait caster. You know, and that's the cliff notes on that. You know, I mean, just loosen it up. You got to get a feel for it. I mean, Tyler, you've done it guiding people. I've done it guiding people, is like getting around that learning curve on a bait, mm-hmm. how to properly use a bait caster. Anyway, the next one up is Joe. Joe says, Pepsi's all around. Loving the podcast. Loving the app. Got questions about musky fishing the slop and with slop masters. Well, Joe, same reason I wrote the article on fishing the slop is your question as well, because we got a bunch of slop master questions this week. But he says he's wanting to know what blade type I prefer, and does the depth type of cover determine what you go with? So, in the article I just put up on the front of the app talking about getting sloppy. So, my goal is when I'm fishing the slop with a slop master is to get as much thump and vibration as I can, so it sort of breaks through the weeds, because weeds are an obstruction to vibration. You know, so the weeds that are present there are going to actually dampen. You know, they're acoustical dampener. If you think of it the way that we hear, and you know, we hear through our ears, which picks up the vibrations in the air. Muskies feel through their lateral line, which are vibrations through the water. And so if you put something in between your ear and a sound source, it dampens the sound or mutes it completely. So if I'm fishing in heavy slop, I want as much thump as I can, which allows that fish, that allows that muskie to target that bait from further away. It allows him to find it quicker. So depending on the slop, in the article I talk about, I usually start with an 800 series Bucher blade or a 700 Indiana. And then depending on how thick the slop is and how the fish are reacting, I will work my way to a willow leaf. Willow leaves are very weed friendly. So I'm going for as much thump and as much vibration I can in slop with the biggest blade that I can get away with that allows me to get one of every two cast into the boat without it being completely fouled. I mean, that's pretty much the you know, your 50% of your casts are coming back fouled if you're doing it the right way. You know, if you're making bogus cast, you're going to have 90% foul rate. So, you know, going for the biggest blade. My go-to is that 700 Indiana. Tyler, you do the same thing. Actually, when I was fishing with you last time, I said, where's your box of blades? You know?
Yep, and you've yep. Got, we you have, got I did selection. The, I did the same modification as mm-hmm. you did. I got a whole box of blades just like you.
Yeah, but that's a thing. It allows us, like, quickly, with the quick change blade little system I did, I actually included that video in the article because there's so many people thinking about this late summer slop. about at the bottom of that article. I have the stuff on there, how I do the modifications for the quick change. And you've just got a box that's full of some extra blades up all the way up to like a mag 10, you know? Mm-hmm. And so you can do any size blade. You've just got to find the blade that will allow you to fish effectively that day. You know, my thing with fishing really heavy slop and with slop masters and stuff, you're just limited. It just is what it is. You're not going to catch every fish that you get near because you just don't have the right presentation. You're trying to pull a fish out of the stuff when nobody else is catching anything. And so let the cover dictate what you can get through it. Start with that 700 or 800 blade. And if it gets really hairy, you know, you might have to go to a French blade. You might have to go to a willow blade. You might have to go a really small blade just to be able to get a presentation through there. That's why I recommend doing the quick change little mod that I didn't say I came up with it, but I just sort of like tweaked it. And that's available, like I said, in that article and a video here on the app. We'll get you dialed in there. But take a hint from me and Tyler the Gabriel. We just keep some extra blades there on the boat. The dudes at the Muskie shop have one of my favorite blades. They got a hammered number 9 that I really like up there. Remember, Tyler, when we were up there, I said, if you don't buy one of these, you're an idiot. You're a complete ding dong.
I bought one.
He bought
one. So me smart good.
Me smart good. Yes, I do. Anyway, you can get blades. They have loose blades at the Muskie shop. So you can get on their website or you can call up there and say, hey, send me some loose blades. That's the best way that I've found to be able to do quick mods. And especially with that system with the slot masters and the quick change, you can have 10, 15 different blades. And essentially, if you got like a black slot master or a grape flame or whatever, you can come up with so many freaking combos, which allows you to do crazy stuff, which parlays into a whole other tangent, which is jigging with spinner baits. I've talked about it before on here. I'm going to show you guys this stuff this winter. It's going to rock thine world. Of jigging with spinner baits. Slop masters are your friend. You can do some pretty wicked stuff. If you look at, and I like Bondi baits, and I like the rubber jig baits, and I like all this stuff, but man, as far as versatility, you know, it allows you to change that blade out. You can put trailers on there. You can put frogs. That's another thing. Being a southern gentleman, we get lots of them Zoom baits. I don't know. Tyler, they sell Zoom up there?
They do. Zoom. They do sell Zoom up here.
Like up in the, probably in the budget section up there. You guys are so bourgeoisie. You know? we are far too eloquent to fish the Zoom. So we're down here. We got them Zoom, son. I'll tell you what. You put that Zoom bait on there and that fish just comes up and goes, woo! Anyway, so... one of my little trickaroos there in the winter, I actually put like a Zoom frog on the back and jig that. So if, you know, if you're like me and you don't like spending $1 trillion on baits, you can take a spinner bait. I don't care, you know, whatever. Whether it be a slop master, whether it be a rad dog, whatever, spinner bait, Dick Pearson's grinder, whatever you want to do. There's a lot of stuff you can do with spinner baits. They're probably what I would call the Swiss Army knife of musky baits. You know,
I like that.
Well, it's one of those things of like, we just talked to Lee there at today's Angler, and you look at that bait Robbie came out with the bit tackle, you know, and they're getting a lot of way big versatility out of the spinner bait by putting essentially a float on it. That's something that you've seen me do for a lot of years. As you can actually, you can actually take, say you don't have the money for that, take you a foam bobber and cut it in half and zip tie it to the arm of your spinner bait. There you go.
That's just amazing. It's a cool modification.
You know, if you're like me where you're a hillbilly and you don't care what it looks like and the fish don't care what it looks like, Go get you a foam cord and wrap it around there. You can figure it out. It's about playing with baits, you know, and I'm not saying that's better or worse, but just don't be afraid of playing with these baits. Spinner baits are probably my number one platform for modification. So, you know, you can do a lot with those. I will keep doing some more videos on that and talking about it. And if you guys want to hear more about it, I need to shut up about it because I just keep going on and on about it. But there's just a lot of stuff you can do that's cool there, and just it allows you to think outside of the box. But me and the guru have some plans for that in the future. And up next is Larry. Larry says, how fast do you move your boat when you're fishing by yourself? This is in regards to casting on some of your favorite spots.
We did a variety of speeds when we were up in Wisconsin.
Variety of speeds.
It's not a single speed. There's no magic number.
It is. Okay. I'm soapboxing tonight pretty hard. I'm sorry. But let me crawl off my spinnerbait soapbox. Let me do a barrel roll over to my boat speed soapbox. The guru and me on our last outing, I pounded the guru, and the guru is an excellent fisherman, but I do things slightly different. And I was showing him, not that you were doing anything wrong, but I was showing you how to do something different, right? Mm-hmm. And what a lot of people lean on when it comes to boat control is fast boat control is easier than slow boat control.
And on continuous.
Yes. The one thing I will tell you, at least the way that I fish, you know, I've caught a couple of these muskies. I'm not big on like how many I've caught or this, that, or the other, but you know, I've done my due diligence. And the majority of them I've caught, from my experience, is by picking things apart and being meticulous, right? That's just the experience I've had with muskie fishing. If you're going to meticulous casting and meticulous presentations, you need meticulous boat control. So slow presentations call for slow boat control and well-placed boat control. So each cast is well-placed and well-presented. If we are on bucktail burning waters and fish that are hot, you can troll the boat around pretty dang fast and it doesn't matter. And so it depends on the bite. Some days leaving that thing on continuous and just sort of doing, you know, running the outside edge of a weed bed or running a rock wall or running around a reef is appropriate and that works. But Tyler, here's what I would love to talk about, because this is a tangent for us. Is reef control.
Absolutely.
That's something me and you have talked about a bunch and have been successful with. Okay. So the deal is this, and this is why we love the podcast and our tangents and our craziness. This is going to be like the super longest podcast. I'm sorry, but I am ready to preach tonight. Can you feel it? Anyway, one thing that I've noticed is like with reefs, is people come up to a reef and they go around it like they would a weed bed, right? Reefs have pockets, holes, different rocks, little tuck behinds, little things in there that need picked apart. And I watch people work a reef, or they work a rock bar, and they work it the same way they would a weed bed. What you've got to do is boat control, and I'm going to paraphrase, I'm going to slow my roll here a little bit and say this, is when it comes to boat control and how you're fishing and the speed that you're fishing at, you need to control your boat in an appropriate manner to the pattern that you have found, right? That makes sense?
So you got to run the play.
Run the play. If we're slow rolling bucktails, why is the boat moving 5 miles an hour? Remember, mm-hmm. You know, me and you had some really big success on a trip we did earlier in the year. We caught a 55. We caught a 47. We caught a 49. But we were fishing so creepy crawly slow that boat control was imperative just to be right on those points. You know, we pull in these points and we go, okay, we know where the fish is going to be at within how many casts? 3-4 casts?
Yep.
We know where he's going to be at, and we have to thread the needle. So if you're in a threading the needle situation, you need to have thread the needle boat control. And the one thing I'd say is this, and I'm sorry, the questions are just so freaking good tonight, I can't stand it. The boat control in that situation, if it's a serious, either a cold front bite, it's a serious finesse bite, you need finesse level boat control and finesse level speeds. the one thing I'll tell you that I've noticed about guys, if I jump on their boat or I'm coaching somebody on their boat, they do one boat, they do one speed. This is the speed I troll around at because it allows me to control the boat, right? And I don't have to readjust. Spend time working on readjusting your boat during the cast so you can stay, you know, a certain distance off the edge. I know I'm just going far afield, but Tyler, help me out here. When I say, like, one thing that me and you focus on, once we find the fish on a certain section of the weed bed, we keep the boat pretty much at the same distance.
Yeah, we don't, like, just all of a sudden go right in or, like, pull way off. We stay on it no matter how fast or how slow we have to go. We're on it.
Right, and it's you got to play the wind. That's the thing with boat control. Wind becomes a thing. You know, if your fish rivers, current's a thing. Boat control, I think, good boat control catches more muskies than I think than anything.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, if you look at, like, Booker's got excellent boat control. And the guys that are really good, that was another, I mentioned his name earlier, talking about the Dick Pearson grinder, but Dick Pearson, you read an article from him, he's just boat control. And allowing you that proper distance from the cover, God, this is a whole, I'll shut up about this, but nonetheless, to go back to your question, there's no clear answer. You've got to, the style of fishing, the bait presentations, and what you're doing dictate boat control. Tyler, this sounds like a podcast we need to do, actually, doesn't it?
On boat control?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Just a whole
podcast
on boat
about
control.
Different types of boat control, all sorts of different stuff.
Yeah, that's actually, I'm tangenting because my brain's just on fire because I can think of a billion different scenarios of, man, gosh, this is the beauty about this, and we love the questions here, is just the way, like, topwater presentations. Like, how many times have you seen that dude that, like, goes in front of you with, say, he's got on a fat bastard or he's gone on a pacemaker. He's got something like this. He's going so fast and he's reeling so fast. But by the time that presentation gets there, the topwater's coming parallel to the boat.
Coming parallel, spinning. It sounds awful. Yeah.
Opposed to, like, once there's this, like, this curve with baits. Once the boat has moved out of that line, you know, if you think, they call it angling for a reason. We got these angles and edges and blah, 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 blah. But when you make that cast, the action of the bait changes dramatically once it gets behind the boat. Once it's not in a direct line from your body and your rod, it changes. I've gone in behind guys like that and just picked it apart and picked off fish. You know, and so anyway, we are taking note, Larry. Thank you very much. I'll get off the soapbox and move on to the next one. You know, it's different everywhere you go. But that's my midday plan, is unless there's like a big peak or something like that where things are looking awesome, or the solar lunar's telling you need to be fishing midday, be thinking about trolling there. And with the evening bite, I would say for a new muskie angler, is topwater and blades again, Tyler. Wouldn't you agree?
That you just replicate the morning.
The morning. You know, and yep. The thing you were saying earlier about getting on those rock humps and those mid-lake humps, though, too, that is an excellent, excellent segue this time of year into trolling.
You can troll around the rock humps. You can troll over them. Dude, I will troll around them, and I'll go right through them. It doesn't matter. There's no rhyme or reason. You just hit every inch of it.
You know, okay, great story. I know we got it on film, and I don't know if it'll make the cut but it was funny. Here's me, here's the guru, here's Joe Booker himself. We're in his wonderful hand tiller recon he just got, right? We've spent countless hours at the muskie shop. Thanks, Jay. Hey, guys, come over here and shoot a video. 9 days later, we get to leave and go fishing. I'm teasing you. No, we were over there, and what happened is Jay quickly shot the video, and then Joe Booker gets inundated, and he's doing, like, the Joe Booker thing where he's taking pictures with everybody at the muskie shop. And so me, Jay, and Tyler are standing in the parking lot like, I just want to go fishing. Come on, Joe. But Joe ate up a lot of the time just because Joe was having to do Joe stuff. And we had a very limited window that we were able to fish that afternoon, right? And we get to go out, and Joe says, we're going to troll. So here's Joe if you've read Crankbait Secrets, if you know anything about Joe, the Depth Raider started trolling, all this stuff. That guy can troll his ass off. We're driving around, and we go through, and Joe goes, there's a fish, right? And we all get excited, and Tyler grabs the tight cam. I get the other rods in, and Joe Booker reels in a potato sack. Okay? So here is like a master troller, a guy that's amazing. Guess what he does? He runs into a piece of crap on the bottom. It's a potato sack, and the rod goes off. It happens to all of us. Don't be afraid of it. You know, I've pulled up all kinds of crap. I pulled up a femur bone a couple months ago of like a bear or something. I was like, I told the guy, throw it back in the lake because I really don't want to deal with like forensic files right now. You know, I don't care if it's human or dog or whatever it is. Get it off the boat, because the second we call somebody, we're going to be in trouble. Trolling is fraught with its own difficulties. You're going to snag. You're going to get caught up in stuff. Not to get on that big tangent, but like I said, if you're new to the sport, start trolling now so that as you grow as a caster, you're growing as a troller. Tyler, you've been doing that. You've been branching out and really popping some nice fish trolling. Man, I am tangent filled this evening. We need to shut up, but we got one more from Mike. And this is a neat question, and it's a fun one. Are muskies susceptible to tonic immobility? Would it be detrimental to a safe release? Okay, so quickly, let's go over here and make sure that I'm not an idiot. But tonic immobility is what I've seen exerted in sharks. It says tonic immobility is a natural state of paralysis that animals enter, often called animal hypnosis. Its function is not certain and may be related to mating in certain animals like sharks. It may also be a way of avoiding or deterring predators, playing dead, thanatosis. Okay, so I'm going to Google tonic immobility muskies.
I have never run into that, but that's cool.
Nobody's really got anything that's worth a crap here. Okay, so, you know, what he's asking is, like, you see on, like, Shark Week, these sharks get old sharky. You turn these sharks upside down, and they go sort of like, bleh. They play possum, if you will. I have never noticed that with muskies. I don't try to turn them upside down. I don't know that it would hurt them. Do you know, Tyler?
I don't think so. I mean, I've had releases where the muskie flips upside down, and then
it's usually
takes off.
Yeah,
it takes off like a bat out of hell.
You know, the thing I'd say is like, God, it's one of those things like you're not trying to like be grim, but you know, if you hold them out too long, or if it's hot, or you know, blah 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 blah, they can't gain their balance. What I tell all my clients is this: when they're rolling up on their sides or acting funky and it's a tough release, I always just say they're trying to gain their equilibrium. You know, they can't really hold their balance in the water. You know, they can't hold up and down, so we're trying to hold them up and down. I would avoid holding a muskie upside down to try to induce tonic immobility, but it would be interesting to see. So if anybody can prove it via video, I'd love to see it if they calm down if you do it. Right? I don't know if it's safe. I'm not saying do something that's not safe. This is a question for one of our smart science people. I don't know if they would even know, because once you've caught, like the way you either catch a fish with hook and line, which is traumatic, or you shock it, which is traumatic. Right?
Zippity zap zap.
Yeah, zappity, mick, zap, zap. So both of those are traumatic experiences, which are going to influence how the fish react. But I don't know if they're going to be susceptible to that. That's something that you could look into. If anybody has any input, let me know, because it'd be cool to know. Because, you know, I've seen them, you know, you take pressure off a muskie when you're fighting it. They just stop fighting, you know.
Yeah, they just kind of go, oh. Okay.
I'm going to swim around. They're like, well, so what? There's something stuck in my face. Anyway, that's a weird question, Mike. I appreciate you asking it. I don't have any experience with it. If anybody's had any experience, let us know, because that'd be neat to know. But anywho, that's about as many questions as I can get through this evening. Tyler, we've got tons more. Guys, keep sending your questions. We are getting through them as quick as we can. We appreciate them. Guys, I will say this. If you've not subscribed to Today's Angler, Lee and Robbie are super cool dudes, and we appreciate him coming on the podcast because they've been a big part of the app. Make sure you go over to their YouTube and do that like and subscribe and subscribe and like and all that internet and stuff everybody's doing nowadays. Do that. Anyway, we're going to sign off from me and the guru. Oh, shoot. No, we're not. We need another contest hour. Man, okay. I forgot that. So you've made, this is like super epic long podcast. So not everybody's going to hear this.
This could be
a fun one.
A super epic long contest. It's going to take a while.
What?
This is my idea.
Okay.
Someone's got to write a Muskie 360 song.
Well, that limits the window.
But record the song and send it to us. I don't care how crappy it is. If it makes me giggle, you'll be a winner.
Okay. I'll do this. The winner of the Muskie 360 song wins a free guide trip.
Ooh. Okay. I like that.
You get a free guide trip with yours truly for the worst Muskie 360 song.
I love it.
I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's you beating pots and pans yelling Muskie 360. You can record it on your iPhone and you can email it to us.
We can put it on the app.
Oh, it'll be on the app. If you do this, we will use it as the intro for a podcast. So, all right, Tyler, we're coming up on the deal. You win. If you're up, I'm going to put it on you, Tyler.
Oh.
Okay. If you're in the South, you get to go with me. If you're in the North, cool. You get to go with the guru.
Done deal.
Right? So it's easier travel. You have to write a Muskie 360 song. It can be 5 seconds long. It can be 50. Listen, if you're so inspired that you write the Stairway to Heaven 9-minute version of a Muskie 360 song, that's cool. Minimum 10 seconds. 5-ish, 6-ish, whatever, right? It can't be like, blah, blah, blah. It's got to be like somewhat song-like. So you got to record it on your phone or whatever it is. Email it to the app. You can send it to muskie360app@gmail.com. That's the email. That's the contact here. If you can't send it through the app, if you can't send the link or anything, you should probably won't be able to. So send it to muskie360app@gmail.com. Your best or worst Muskie 360 song. It could be a ballad of the guru. It could be you just saying Muskie 360 over and over and over while shouting and just making noise. I want to hear it. Tyler, excellent idea.
It could even be a love song about Half Spool Steve. I mean, it could be anything.
It could be anything you want. Let's hear your best Muskie 360 song. The winner will be premiered. The world premiere will happen on the intro of one of the episodes of the podcast. Keep it stupid, folks. I want to hear.
We can't guarantee a record deal,
but we can promise false. We can give you false hope.
Yeah, we can give you false hope.
I mean, we'll make you a superstar, baby. I will make you a star. Let's hear your worst or best Muskie 360 song or rap. Listen, if you need to rap, I'm open to that. I'm open-minded.
Dude, if someone raps, I'll be very happy.
I hope so. Whatever you got, let's hear your musical talent here. Tyler, that's one of the best ideas I've heard all day. Bring it on. The worst or best Muskie 360 song, send it to muskie360app@gmail.com. Winners will receive a free guide trip with Tyler, the Muskie Guru Andrews, or Stephen Retard McKinsky Paul in the South. Anyway, you guys are ridiculous. We love y'all. We'll see you next week.
Sayonara, sucker.
Bye. The Muskie 360 Podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Bucher Outdoors, the number one name in Big Fish products, and The Muskie Shop. Brrrr.